Yep.
Well, Jimbo, lots of things are new.
Yeah.
I got a story for you.
Let's hear it.
It's a good one. I'm gonna
Ooh.
bust it out into a marketing story because, you know, as we always like to say, that's the prism through which I see the world, through the eyes of a marketer. So, you know, I had a surgery last week, and
Yeah.
so
Was it
here's the
only
deal,
last
man.
week?
I know, right? Just last week, last Monday. Crazy, crazy how time flies. So anyway, I had the surgery, and long and the short of it is, this is considered an elective operation. So they're getting paid directly from me. Like, it's not going through an insurance company. There's no government entity paying it, right? It's me cutting them a check. So prior to me cutting them a check, it was like the world's greatest follow-up there is, right? You know, they'd call me the day before my appointment. They'd text me, you know, reconfirming everything. I get there. It was like, you know, the white glove treatment and, okay, you know, we want to set another appointment. We want you to actually talk to the surgeon. And, you know, so they set up this other appointment and again, call the day before, text the day before, everything, right? Just perfect customer follow-up. I'm like, this is the way it should be. Then it was like the second I gave him a check, it was like, okay, next customer. It's just like,
Really?
screw this guy. Yeah. Oh, dude, so bad. So they kept telling me, hey, a week before the surgery, you're going to get a call from our nurse, one of the nurses, I guess. And it's your pre-op phone call. And she's going to go over some important things with you, and she's going to confirm exactly what time we need you to show up for surgery. So I haven't had a surgery in 20 years, right? So I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I want the pre-op. I want to know, what do I need to know? So 1 week before was a Monday. Monday rolls around, no call. And I'm like, dude, I'm kind of freaking out, right? Because, you know, it's a big
And you
surgery
paid in
and
full up front? Is that what it is?
paid in full up front, right?
Got it, got it,
Like,
got it. Okay, okay.
they won't even talk to you. I mean, like, you can't schedule it until you've at least given them half the money. And then you got to pay everything, I think, I don't know, like a week or two before, something like
Yep.
that.
Okay.
So anyway, Tuesday rolls around and I like email them. I'm like, dude, I haven't heard from anyone. Where's this pre-op phone call, and are we still doing this? I mean, because I'd been told two different times. I've been told 6:30 a.m. I've been told 10:30 a.m. And I'm like, okay, that's two totally different people I need to have bring me based on the time. Because if it's 6:30, I can't have my wife do it. I got two young kids. If it's 10:30, I can have my wife do it, but I got to let my other buddy know I don't need him to take me, right? So it's like, what is it? So then I get this call on Wednesday. They're like, okay, well, right now we got you down for 6:30. And as we get closer to it, I'm like, closer to it? You got like freaking 2 more days that you're open, and then it's surgery day. And I'm like, okay. She's like, you know, when we get closer to it,
Kind of
someone will call you
nerve-wracking
again and
too.
confirm. Oh, dude, right? Totally. So then, and it gets better, right? I mean, it gets better. So finally, the Friday before, it's like 1 o'clock. I still haven't had this call. I'm freaking out, right? So I email him. I'm like, this is ridiculous, man. I was supposed to get a call on Monday. I've heard nothing. I don't know what time I'm supposed to be in there. I got to arrange for transportation. I want to know, what's this pre-op? What do I need to know? And so then the gal immediately calls me back, and it wasn't the main gal who was supposed to call me, but I'm like, I don't give a rip, right? Just what do I need? And it was like nothing. Like, the pre-op phone call was just like all the usual crap, you know, don't eat after midnight. And yeah, basically that. I mean, I don't even know that there was really anything else other than don't eat after midnight, because they're going to put you under anesthesia and they don't want you vomiting while you're under anesthesia, because then you die. So I'm like, okay, cool, great, you know, and confirm 6:30, perfect, right? So I show up 6:30, go through the whole surgery. It was a really long surgery. And I'm in the recovery room. I'm waking up, and they're like, "Oh yeah, they couldn't finish everything, so you're gonna be back next Monday." And I'm at 6:30. I'm like, "Oh, okay, right." But I'm like half out of it, right? So I think that's like, what they tell me. Yeah, pretty much, right? Because I'm like, I've been out for 6 hours under anesthesia. I have no idea what the heck y'all are talking about. So, so my wife picks me up, takes me home. Wednesday, I hear finally from the pre-op nurse, and she's doing my pre-op phone call. She's like, "Okay, we got you down for Monday at 6:30. Don't eat after midnight." You know, goes through the whole crap. And then she goes, and then at the end of the call, I go, oh, by the way, can you make sure the doctor calls in a new prescription for pain medication? Because mine will be done by the time of that. Oh, my gosh, dude. I got like five things telling me someone's at the door if I needed to know that. Freaking Amazon delivering a package and everything in my house just goes off. So anyway, I'm like, "Hey, you know, make sure the doctor calls in a prescription." And she said, "Oh yeah, I'll do that right now," because I was going to be out of pain medication. I'm like, "Dude, I don't want to go through another major surgery and not have my narcotics all lined up, right? You got to have the narcotics lined up." And they'd given me the surgeon's phone number. So I texted them. I'm like, "Hey, you know, I'd really like to chat with you for like 3 minutes and just find out what all was done on Monday and what all still needs to be done." Cause I had a post-op appointment on Tuesday, and like the nurse didn't know what was done. I'm like, "What the hell is the point of a pre-op or a post-op?"
Oh my God.
Like, yeah, they just gave me the
phone.
Dude, right? And I'm like, "Okay." So I really like the surgeon, like totally dig this guy. He's really cool, down to earth. And he like walks me through everything. And so I ask him the question. I'm like, "You know, is it too soon to be doing another surgery on Monday? You know, cause it's a week away and I was, you know, under for 6 hours. I mean, that's a long time to be under." And so he's like, "Oh yeah, you'll be fine. Cause you know, the area that we're gonna be working on next, we didn't touch that area. So you'll be good." So I'm like, "Okay, cool." Right. I'm just like geared up mentally, sweet, you know, done on Monday, basically. Right. Everything's done. Then I just go into recoup period, basically 6 weeks, not able to do anything. No problem. So Saturday comes around and I still haven't gotten the prescription for the updated medication. So I know, because it's narcotics, like the doctor has to call it in. So I just text them again. I'm like, "Hey, you know what? I think this fell through the cracks. But I need the prescription. Here's my pharmacy's information. Here's my information. If you could call it in, that'd be awesome." So about an hour later, I get a call from the surgeon. And he's like, "Oh, you know, I think because it's the holiday weekend, you know, Thanksgiving and all, no one got a hold of you to tell you that your surgery's been postponed." And I'm like, "What?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, your surgery's been postponed. The main medical director, he wants more time in between the two operations. He's the one that oversees all of us and blah, blah." I'm like, "So in other words, if I hadn't texted you for medication, I would have shown up Monday morning. My ride would have already left. I would have been there at 6:30 and you guys would have been like, 'Oh, we're not expecting you. What are you doing here?'" Like, this
is freaking
ridiculous. Like, I was like dumbfounded at how piss poor their operation was. Like, once I gave them the check, it was just like, "Whatever, dude, you're nothing to us. Screw this guy. Go on to the next thing." And
which is so unfortunate, because then you're going to be, I would think, more hesitant to refer anyone there, right? Or have any.
Oh, I would never refer anyone to them. I've been doing videos, kind of like how you and I talked for YouTube. I've been doing all these videos on the recovery and stuff like that. And then like that become like the focal point of all these videos. You'll never guess what happened today. It was just like, I'm going to nail these guys on social media. But I'm like, I got to wait until after the second surgery before I piss them off.
Right. You're like, record everything now so you don't forget, but just don't post it yet.
Yeah, exactly. That's my entire thinking on it is, and I kind of want to like bust that out. Like, hey, do you realize I have three podcasts and I'm going to nail you guys online if you don't get your act together? Just, but yeah,
gosh,
that's like unfortunate.
It's that whole problem with like, they're really good at what we call the before stage of the sales cycle, right? You know, getting the client, all that, but then they're crap when it comes to the during stage, which is now you got a client, how do you treat them? Which means their after stage, I bet you they don't even have one. And I'm like, yeah.
Opportunity for you to squeak in there, Pete.
I could, but I think they're going to be pissed when they see my freaking videos about sure them. Huh? So yeah, I could always come back and go, hey, you want me to take those videos down? You know how much I paid? I want a check for that. Those videos come down.
They didn't change the price of your surgery, did you, since you have to go back again?
No, as far as I was concerned, that was their screw-up.
Oh,
like
perfect.
Because I guess the way that they did it is they don't want, like, their rule is they don't have people under for more than 6 hours. So that's why they just ended it at that point. It was because they don't like, because there's obviously health issues that could happen the longer someone's under anesthesia. So they're just in office rule is 6 hours is our limit. And we're not going over that.
Makes sense.
So, and I'm like, you know, as far as that's concerned, I'm kind of like, well, okay. In some ways I think it was good because now that I'm a week and a half out, like, a lot of the pain that I had is gone from the post-surgery. So I'm kind of like, I could deal with more pain, but if I'd had all of that pain at once, I'm like, I don't know if I could have moved. Like, it's a lot they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So in some ways, I'm kind of like, I wasn't really bothered that they broke it up into two. I'm pissed. Like, now my second surgery is scheduled for December 29th. Because, I finally get a hold of someone at the office on Monday, and they're like, oh, yeah, well, you know, the main medical director, he wants to put it out for 6 weeks. I'm like, no, that doesn't freaking work for me. Like, you're going to have me out of the gym, out of everything for 3 months
right
total? No, that doesn't work.
Right.
And, oh, let me find out what I can find out. So she gets back to me the next day. Okay, you know, the guy said, as long as you're aware of the risks and you don't have any health issues and blah, 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 we can do it earlier. So it's like 5 weeks now. And I'm like, you shaved off a week? Ooh. You know?
But they were willing to do it the next week.
So, the surgeon was, because he didn't care. He was like, ah, you're going to be fine. But he wasn't, it's not his company, right? He's a hired gun, basically.
Got it.
Whoever is in charge of all that is like, we don't want to take the risk, which I get from a risk standpoint, right? Because even I was
sure,
like, a week later, that's kind of soon. But, you know, like, you look at the hospital, like when someone goes into a hospital for a heart transplant, that's like 22 hours. So it's
right,
not like they can't do it. It's their particular
sure
rule is, this is what we do. And but every time I talk to them, they're like, oh, I'm sure we could do it in one operation. I'm sure we can do it in one. Like, literally every time. So, you know, it didn't really
surprise
me. A
little miscommunication.
Yeah. I'm like, I think that was a little bit of salesmanship on your part. Oh, we can do it in one op. Nope. Oh, nope. Guess not. You know, what are you going to do when the guy's already knocked out on the table? Just, you know.
Right.
So.
Well, halfway there.
Yeah. I guess so, right? Technically, according to the surgeon, I'm three-quarters of the way there. He's like, oh,
okay.
Next operator, it'll be like 2.5 hours, 3 hours. I'm like, okay, so in other words, 4.5 to 5, because you guys are liars. You know,
yeah. They're like, I can't trust anything.
Pretty much, you guys are in salesmanship mode again. It's not true. It's not true at all. But yeah,
potentially
dude,
a third
like,
surgery.
I know, dude. Oh, dude, I'd be like, forget you guys. I'm living with what we got now. I'm done. I'm throwing in the towel. That would just be me at that point.
Yeah.
But I'm more pissed about the timeline. Yeah, I'm just pissed about the timeline. Like, it's I really don't want to be out of the gym for 3 months. You know, like, I know that sounds kind of vain, but it's like, yeah, but I worked really hard to get to where I was, and now, you know, 3 months out,
gonna lose your game,
have an
bro.
Impact. I know. What's up?
But if, you know what, though, Pete? At least you'll probably be pretty healed by summer. So you'll be able to, like, show off your summer bod.
There we go.
You may never wear a t-shirt again.
Dude, oh, this is the best. Okay, so without getting into all the details of everything I had to have done for all of our listeners, like, they even care. Part of what I had to have done was a hernia. And it's not like a lower hernia. I don't even remember what they call it, but it was like high up on my chest. And that was actually left over from the last surgery I had, which was 20 years ago. And I always thought it was scar tissue. For years, thought it was scar tissue because I never had it before the surgery. And then I had my gallbladder removed like 20 years ago. And then, you know, I always had like this little bump. And so I was like, oh, it's scar tissue. And then as I lost all that weight, you know, it just got more and more pronounced because when you're really fat, it's like, you know, what's one more bump? It's just like, whatever, right?
Right.
And so, so anyway, it just kept getting bigger and bigger. And so anyway, when I went in and saw the surgeon, he was like, oh, that's not scar tissue. He goes, that's a hernia from where they cut through the muscle to get to the gallbladder. He's like, oh yeah, we can totally take care of that. And, you know, all that stuff. So anyway, so part of what they gave me, and I know you've had to wear one of these in the past, is this compression shirt thingy. Like, it's like,
yep.
I've got...
Mine was like a vest.
Yeah, yours was like a vest. Mine is like, it's kind of like what wrestlers wear. It's like a onesie, if you will. Like, it goes all the way down, okay. like shorts. And it's so funny. I was telling my wife yesterday, I go, I got to be honest with you, hon. I don't know that I would have lost any weight ever if I would have known about these compression shirts, man. I put on one of these suckers. I look really good in this thing. I'm like,
women have them. They're called Spanx.
That was the funny thing is I kind of feel like it's false advertising, right? Because I'm like, I look at myself in the mirror. I'm like, dang, dude, 100%. Look at me. My chest is all like built. I got like abs all of a sudden. And she goes, yeah, that's why that lady is who came out with Spanx is a billionaire. Because, you know, all these women are like, but I'm like, dude, I get it. I totally feel like it's false advertising, though, because, you know, take it off, and all of a sudden, it's like, okay, there's his Pete. I'm not as good anymore. But I was so like, funny. Man, I may always wear one of these for the rest of my life. You know, I'll just get the shirt version. These things are freaking awesome.
So funny.
That's so funny.
But
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Anyway. So, point to everyone, the message from that is, how you treat your customers is really important, right? You want to get repeat business, and you want to get referrals, and you want them to actually be proud of you. I mean, how you treat them is everything. Like, even though I love this surgeon, I think he's doing a great job. It's like, yeah, but would I want a friend to endure that kind of crap? I wouldn't. Like, I wouldn't want someone else to go through that and deal with really bad customer service. So
it's, and you would
anyway,
think too,
my complaint there. I start getting texts again.
No, well, you would think though, since their like prepayment service is so good, you would think that they're using some sort of, you know, program to do
automation,
that, right?
CRM,
some sort of automation.
Something.
So you would think that that system would have an after payment. Or after surgery automation, you know, it's kind of weird that it's only on one side of things.
You know, the reality is they could have just screwed up, right? I mean, it's totally possible they just screwed up with me and didn't mean to. But it kind of doesn't matter to you when you're the one that gets screwed up on. It's like, I'm going to assume that's the way you run your business for everybody.
Totally.
And maybe it's not. Maybe they're not normally like that. I don't know, but yeah. Anyway, that wasn't the subject for today's call. But you know me, I always got to share what's going on in my life, and that was the fun one of late. But anyway, here was an interesting talk I had earlier this week with another one of our detailers. And I think he even reached out to you and was asking you some questions. So one of our guys wanted to run a contest and get more business. So he went through the contest program that we've got there on the Inner Circle website. And so he's asking for a little bit of advice on it. And so I was telling him, okay, so here's what I would do for the contest is I would, you know, run it. Let's say it's for an exterior detail. Run it for an exterior detail. And we were talking about who to target. I'm like, really, what I would do is just pick the zip codes that you want to target or the city that you want to target. And then, you know, who's your ideal age group? Is it, you know, 30 plus or whatever it is? Like, look at your client base. And then that's who I'd run it to. It's just everybody there who fits 30 plus and is in that zip code. I really wouldn't go too much more detailed than that. Like, I wouldn't go, like, we used to be able to pick income and cars they drive, and I wouldn't do that just because if you're running a contest, it's kind of like you just want eyeballs on it. And then he came to the, what I think he was really after was he's like, well, what I really want is I want codings. And so, you know, I think about running a contest for a coding. And so and then I go, okay, well, here's the deal. If it's a coding, then I actually wouldn't run a contest for that. And here's the reason for that. Codings and details are totally different clients. The average person understands what a detail is, at least their version of what a detail is. Like, we still got to talk to them to find out what do they mean by detail, but they get it. A coding is usually someone who knows something about the whole detailing stuff as far as like you've even had people, Jimbo, who want specific brands for their coding, right? Who are like, I want XYZ brand. So that's a completely different buyer. So if you're running a contest like on Facebook for a coding, I don't know that you're going to make enough money because, again, you're going to give away one for free and then you're going to try and hit everyone up as the runner-up winner. You can give them some sort of discount. But I don't know that you're getting enough people who even know what a coding is. So, oh yeah, I'm a runner-up winner, but now I got to pay $800 instead of $1,000, or you know, $1,200 instead of $1,600. Like, that's a lot of money. It's not like a detail where, oh, you mean it's $200, but now it's $150. Oh, okay, I'll get it done, right? So it's a completely different type of sale. And I'm like, to me, the coding, that just screams Google. Google ad, because someone who's looking for someone who can do a coding on Google is a buyer. Like, I don't have to explain to them what a coding is or anything like that. It's really just request a quote time. And that's the point that I was making to them, is I actually wouldn't do a contest for codings. I would literally just do Google ads and run them through the funnel of request a quote. And so, I would, and again, because he's like, you know, do I offer, you know, interior with it? Do I do this, that, and the next? I'm like, look, here's what you do. You offer them, request a quote, the whole, you know, send me pictures of your car, and then find out what is it they want, and then you build the quote based on what it is it that they actually want. And then if you're running some sort of like December discount, if you, because that was part of his thing, like if you, I think, either booked it or paid for it by a certain date in December, you got a, you know, 10% discount or whatever it was. Great. So then, okay, now that I've built this thing, I know exactly what you want. It's going to be, you know, $1,600 or whatever it is, but I've got a December discount, 10% off if you book it by X date. That's a much better way to do that for codings than running a contest. Because if you're running a contest, now I got to explain to people what a coding is. If they don't know what it is, it's, I don't think it's going to work. So that was my own personal opinion on that. I don't know if you've got an opinion on doing a contest for codings or anything like that, but that was,
mine
that
was
my
mine
advice
was similar
then.
To that, at least and the reason why I had him reach out to you, Pete, was he was more interested in the Facebook side of things, but I kind of told him the same thing because I saw the same thing happen with Google ads is, you know, in the early days of codings, there wasn't like enough search volume for it because people didn't understand it. It wasn't as popular as it is now, you know? And so in the early days, I was running Google ads for car coatings, and it didn't really work, not because the targeting didn't work, because the search volume wasn't high enough, you know?
Right.
But now, a few years later, the search volume is there, and there are people looking for coatings, right? And so I kind of encouraged him, too, to look at the Google ad side of things if he wanted to do a coating. But I still thought he should do a contest on Facebook because the other guy that we had do it had such good success with the follow-up or the runner-up prizes, you know, which I think when we talk about the contest is really where it's at, is the runner-up. And like the point that you made, the runner-up price for a coding is still a pretty hefty price tag, you know, unless you really are in the market for a coding itself, you know, which I just don't think, you know, coatings in general are quite there yet, right? They're not,
right.
The masses aren't, it's getting there, but it's not quite there yet, I don't think, where the masses understand it like they do, like, oh, you can shampoo my mats? Like, clean up my car? Like, right. Yeah, I could use a car cleaning. You know, like, it's not as adopted as that yet, you know? So I think part of that is kind of on the same lines.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for that is just the whole mindset of a coating to a lot of people who don't know, right? It's, wait, isn't it the crap that the dealer tried to sell me when I bought the car? Like, they're still thinking that. And if it hadn't been that I had worked with you for however many years it was when I got my car, I would have not known to ask for a coating. But because I knew you and you'd already kind of explained it to me, and I think we'd even done the guides by then, I was like, okay, Jimbo, I need you to come do a coating on my car, right? That's what I had, wasn't it? Like, I still got to go. That's what it was, wasn't it? It was a coating.
Yeah, snake oil.
But that's only because I worked with you. Otherwise, I would have been like, you know, that's the crap they're always trying to stick you with at the dealer when you go to buy your car. I would have never have thought, you know, this is a good thing.
Right.
And I think that's where the population, too much of them are still.
Yes.
They don't get it.
Yes.
But they totally get, what they totally get is a wash and a wax. Like, even using terms like clay bar and stuff like that, it's starting to become more known, but it still isn't the masses that know it. So you got to be careful whenever you start using insider terms, because that's our jargon. It's not their jargon. So that's why, you know, it's always good when you talk to them and find out, what do you mean by a detail? Like, what is your expectation of a detail? And if they're like, well, I want a clay bar, I want this. Okay, so now I know I'm dealing with someone who understands this, and now I know exactly what they want. Now I can quote them appropriately to give them exactly what it is that they want. But if we just kind of assume they know what we're talking about.
Because if someone starts, it's not, right.
Yeah.
Because totally. And that's where coatings are at. If you're a serious car person, you're going to, even if you're a pretty serious car person, you're going to be able to understand coatings, but it's even as far as like what brand you want. I mean, it's still kind of the wild, wild west for that kind of stuff, you know?
Right.
So it's still in the very, very early days, you know? So, but Google ads are starting to really work for that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, the same thing even with, you know, paint correction, if that's like your deal and stuff like that. Again, the two best ways to do paint correction are sell paint correction. One is, I think, again, Google ads. Again, you're getting people who know what it is and are looking for it. And then the second way is, like, we've had so many people who have done, you know, someone came to them from a detail. And they're like, hey, I can tell they need paint correction. Hey, let me do half your hood so you can see what it is. And if you like it, I can do the whole car. Here's what it would cost. If you don't like it, I'll finish off the rest of the hood just so the hood doesn't look funny. And I can't remember that guy's name. He was in Texas. But that's how he used to sell it. And he goes, I've never had to, you know, finish off the hood. Every time they see it, they're like, well, that's what I want done. But I love that strategy, right? It's the whole, let me do one for free and show you how good it can actually look. And if you like it, great. If you don't, no problem. Here's what we'll do so it just doesn't look funny on the car. We'll just finish off the rest of the hood and everything's cool.
Or make it, leave it. Just leave it look funny. So
I would.
So they're always
that,
reminded.
Then you start to look like
I'm joking.
Yeah, you look like the salesman jerk. You know, oh great, now I got to drive around with my car looking retarded. You know, so
you know what? There was one time that I did a test spot like that, and I didn't get the job, but I also never heard back from the guy. And I always wonder about that, like, what happened to that car, you know, because I did it right on the middle of the hood, you know, and the car was wrecked, you know, and I never heard back from I even tried following up with him a couple times. I think it was out of his budget what I had quoted him.
Sure, sure.
But I even followed up and never, ever heard back. He probably just let it get
That's
bad
funny.
Like the rest of the car was, but I always think about that.
Maybe he was going to sell it and just get rid of it anyway. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So, interesting.
But, yeah. So, you just got to be careful when you're doing those higher price stuff. How you're going to find a client for it. And I don't think running a contest would make a whole lot of sense for the higher price stuff, because we got to educate them too much on what the heck it actually is.
That and maybe you're going to do it too, right?
Well, yeah, exactly right. So maybe if it was like a contest and you're doing it for like the local Porsche club and everyone there knows what it is, but it's like, that's not a Facebook contest. It's like, you know, or maybe to some car club where everyone there knows about cars. They know about all of that stuff. And that would be probably the only way I would do a contest for a high-end thing. Like, Codings or something like that, where I'm already talking to a lot of people who know what that is, and that's why they're entering that contest. I want to get that. I want that deal for my car.
Totally.
But again, that's all about
the
audience.
Totally. I will say, though, as I think Meguiar's just launched a kind of a coding, and a lot of these bigger brands, Turtle Wax, Meguiar's, whatever, Adams, they're definitely using that, like, that verbiage of, like, ceramic coating. And so it's definitely trickling down. So I don't think we're too far off from something like that. And you can, and that's where it's going to get interesting, too, where a contest that may work with a coating would be for, like, a, you know, they have different, essentially, grades of coatings now, right? Everything from, like, a spray coating to, like, a wipe-on coating. So I could see something, the use of like a spray-on coating that doesn't take nearly as much prep and doesn't take nearly as much time to install it either, could potentially work in the future. But I still think we're maybe another year out from it, at least a year out from kind of it hitting, you know, where people are asking for a coating of some sort instead of like a wax or something like that. Or sealing.
So these,
you know,
brands, as they're coming out with this stuff, is it along the lines of still a do-it-yourself product, or is it kind of like how a lot of these coatings are, you know, they only sell through distributors, basically, who are licensed for their products?
Right. So it's the tide is shifting. Where it started was you had to be a registered installer, and you got like a radius around your shop or your location chiseled out where no one else in that radius could install that same coating. And then, you know, I always kind of thought that was kind of dumb, because then you have it seems like it's almost always a race to the bottom, you know, with these things.
Right.
And so what started to happen was the bigger brands of the world started releasing, you know, ceramic coatings. And they have a reach to the, you know, retail market, right? So people thought they could buy a can of this stuff and spray it on their car for $100. They can just do it themselves instead of going to the detailer who's going to spend, you know, they'll spend $1,200 with it. And the divide was too great, you know? So we're seeing a big decline in what detailers are able to charge for this stuff, because the general consumer is a little confused in the difference between the coating that the detailer will install and the ceramic coating that they can go buy on the shelves or buy online for $100 and do it themselves. You know, there's
right.
The bigger brands are very clever with their marketing, because shoot, when they're used to selling a bottle of spray wax for $12, and now they could sell this ceramic coating in aerosol form for $80. You know, their margins are insanely high on that, and they don't care about the professional detailer. They're selling to the retail market. You know, so when you look at a brand like Meguiar's or Turtle Wax or whatever, you know, their market that they already have nailed is the you know, the retail general consumer, you know, and so they see the opportunity there. And so a lot of these brands are saying, well, don't pay the professional to do it. Just buy our can for $100 and do it yourself, you know. So that's something that detailers are starting to come up against too, you know, and there is a difference, obviously, but with the bigger brands ushering in the term ceramic coating, the detailers that are able to differentiate what they can do for a customer versus what the customer can do at their house by themselves, the better and more clear they can differentiate that, the longer they will be able to command a higher dollar amount, you know, for that ceramic coating.
Right. Yep.
So, but it's,
yeah. And that makes total sense. Tough.
Yeah. You know, but it's tough because I get customers calling and saying, you know, well, I could buy a ceramic coating for $100 and, you know, I just pay you to put it on. And it's like, got to go through that whole education process of it's different, you know?
You go, yeah, so now it's going to be $1,100 because I don't have to spend the $100 on it. So that's fine. Right.
True.
You understand it's all labor, buddy. That's what you're paying for. All labor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
So, but Cody.
So, anyway, do you have anything that you wanted to cover?
I don't think so. I lost my train of thought. I was going to say something. I was doing a podcast this morning with someone and we were talking about coatings and I was just going to say something and I totally forgot. Oh, coatings, you know, the thing that I love about coatings and that are really, I think, beneficial for coatings and detailers are that for the first time, it really raised the average, like, ticket per customer, you know, and has really made the ability for detailers to start making some real money and, like, grow a real business, you know, and that's kind of one thing that I was talking about on that podcast this morning that I was he asked, you know, where do you think I was actually being interviewed, and he said, where do you see, you know, what excites you about the future of the industry, and it's, I responded with that, like, I've seen this evolution over the past few years, and it keeps, like, picking up steam faster and faster and faster as more money is kind of pumped into the industry. But it's really, you know, going away from the DIY feel to a very, not corporate, but a very, like, put together, like, real business vibe or look and feel, you know, not so much like hodgepodge together anymore, you know? So I was trying to encourage people on that podcast to, you know, if you're not doing coatings, get into the coating game, look at your branding, look at your marketing, like look at ads, look at what your ad copy is, you know, and get, if you're not up to speed, get up to speed so you don't get left in the dust, you know?
Right. Right. Well, I'm still overwhelmed whenever I'm out riding around my community. And I still see like some of the detailers that are servicing my community. I'm like, I'd never hire you based on your vehicle that you drive.
Like, I'm Isn't just like, that I don't... so interesting?
It is.
That's so over by my shop, there's a couple guys that come every week and service this office park. And then even by my house, there's a couple Volvo guys that roll around. And, you know, a big problem that, at least on the Facebook groups and a lot of things I hear from other detailers talk about is like, oh, the competition is so stiff and the competition is so bad. Like, and it's just a price war to the bottom. And, you know, when I first got started, I believed that too. But now that I am a little bit more experienced and I open my eyes a little bit more and see these like basically just mobile car washers, which is what I was when I first started. I was a mobile car washer. There was no comparison. I wish someone would have told me back then, like, dude, your business looks so much different than their business. They are not your competition. They don't have matching rims on their van. Their paint is peeling. They're wearing clothes that are like 8 sizes too big and like 10 years, you know, needed to be thrown away 10 years ago. You know, I was rolling up in a nice, at bare minimum, a branded t-shirt up to a, you know, a branded polo, you know, in a nice looking truck or with a trailer or a clean van. And, you know, it's like when you actually start to look around, you know, a lot of these people that are rolling around as mobile car washers, usually they're not the competition of a detailer. Even if you're a mobile detailer is much different than a mobile car washer, you know? And there's things that you could do way outside the scope of the work itself to make you stand out from quote unquote competition, you know, relatively easily. Like, just clean your own damn car. Imagine that. Just have a clean. I had a total piece of junk white Chevy Express van for about 3 years. It was a total piece of junk. It had like 80, 90, 100,000 miles on it. For the detailers, I didn't do any paint correction on it. It was scratched to all crap with, like, not big scratches, but like what us detailers would call like micro marring, right? Because I just didn't care. It was such a piece of junk. I didn't care to like do a paint correction on it, but I always kept it like clean, and I always kept the rims free of like any brake dust, and I shined the tires. And I can't tell you how many people thought that van was brand new. And it was a total piece of junk.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yes, but I had like nice branding on it. I had a nice logo on it, you know, sleek and subtle. It wasn't wrapped or anything, but it was just like very sleek, and I just kept it clean, right? And it was like so many people thought it was brand new just because it was clean. And so it doesn't have to be, you know, an extensive branding, you know, operation. Just keep your stuff clean and look presentable, you know?
Right.
If you can't afford branded t-shirts, just wear a nice, blank, newer t-shirt, you know?
You know, a company that I've been using to make my t-shirts is Printful.com.
Yep.
And not expensive at all. I mean, I want to say it's like, I don't know, 13, 14 bucks for a t-shirt. And
got it.
I mean, relatively quick. So anybody could afford a branded t-shirt. And it didn't make me like
couple,
order,
right?
Yeah, I mean, and that was the thing. There was like no minimum. I don't think. I still ordered a bunch, but you know, because I wanted hats and shirts and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it wasn't. I think anybody could do it, and then you look like a professional.
I mean, for what it cost to get that, the value that it shows is, you know, 100 times that, you know.
Right.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
And then people also take you more seriously too, right? When you show up
100%.
And you're like, hey, it costs $1,200 for this coating, but you're sitting there in a polo and nice shorts with your branded, you know, your logo on your shirt. Like, okay, well,
yep.
I'm not dealing with the guy who's got a van that barely runs and has shown up, like you said, in jeans that are 10 sizes too big, stained, and just looking like I don't want them touching my crap, let alone supposedly cleaning it. So, yeah, big difference.
Big difference.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's all I got.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, what we'll do is I'll have Travis get this call up on the website if you want to go back and re-listen to any of it. And then we'll be back in a couple more weeks for our last call of the year. So, look forward to talking to everyone then. Thanks a lot, Jimbo. Appreciate your time.
Cool. Thanks, Pete. All right. See ya.
Take care, guys. Bye.